you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome back to Kotaku Split Screen, the only podcast that counts as an additional rep at the gym. It's October 24th, 2019, and we can't talk about Death Stranding, but we can talk about Sayonara Wild Hearts, the musical Infinite Runner I'm playing on the Switch, and Disco Elysium, the role-playing game that lets Kirk organize his main character's brain. We also bring on Kotaku staff editor Natalie DeGraffenried to discuss Ring Fit Adventure and past exercise games that we've loved and hated, from Dance Dance Revolution to Wii Fit. We wrap it all up with off-topic talk about Charlie's Angels, Watchmen, and, of course, Kirk's music pick. Let's get to it! We are back for another episode of Kotaku Split Screen. I'm Maddie Myers, and I'm joined once again by Kirk Hamilton. Hey, Kirk.
Hello, Maddie. Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you, too. And, you know, Jason still isn't here, but I have a feeling he'll be back soon.
Perhaps. I have a feeling, too, because I actually definitely know that he'll be back next week. But yes, he will be back soon.
Yeah, or at least that's what he told us. Maybe he'll decide next week that he'd just rather keep chilling with that baby that's living in his house now. And he just doesn't want to talk to us ever again because there's a baby there.
That's true. It's pretty fun to hang out with your baby, I would imagine. But I think he does miss us. I think he misses all of you out there listening. So we'll be excited to have him back.
Yeah,
if he does
decide
to join us, which he will, because he said he would.
Yeah. And there's another cool thing that happened this week, which is that Kirk made a totally sick YouTube video of himself playing a bunch of instruments.
I did.
And it rules.
Thanks. Yeah, it was fun.
Do you like the soundtrack to the Monkey Island games? Have you ever thought to yourself, Kirk Hamilton could do a very good cover of this and play every single part? Well, check out this freaking cool YouTube video that exists.
Have I got a YouTube video for you? Yes, this is my shameless plug for a new thing. I hadn't made one of these in forever. I made one for Undertale like 2 years ago or something while I was still at Kotaku. I've been kind of meaning to do one. I think I'm going to start doing these more often, but
video
I finally
game
got
covers,
it together.
Just in general?
Yeah, like this kind of video, or just even not just video game covers, but covers or just fun little YouTube video arrangements of things. Because I finally got my whole operation up and running. So it was cool anyways. It was like people seemed to dig it, which is nice. Tim Schafer said something nice about it, which is cool.
Oh, that's great.
Designers,
I didn't know
writers
that
of the game. Yeah, and it was fun. It was like a fun project. I played a ton of instruments. I recorded the whole thing and kind of wrote it out and then faked some of it together in the studio later. It's kind of a mix of like a really elaborate score for some of it and then sometimes just sitting there at the microphone being like, I don't know, what would sound good? Let's figure something out. And that music is so good. That original, the original score, and especially that original theme music. Just like really great stuff. There's so much going on. It's interesting to compare it to like console music from that same era. This is in 1990. They had so many more voices on PC. It's like 32 voice MIDI or whatever.
Right.
And so there's all these elaborate counter melodies going on and just stuff I never noticed before when I was a kid that I found now. And the whole first half of the arrangement is really just like things that were already there, just, you know, played on a clarinet so you can kind of hear it better.
Mm-hmm.
It's so cool though. Like, it's really dense and kind of, it's like rhythmically hip. There's like bars of six and bars of four. It's like doing all this like cool counting stuff. It's just a lot cooler than I realized that it was, which was one of those fun realizations. I'm like, I'm going to do an arrangement of this. And then I listened and was like, oh shit. Like, this is going to be really,
did you like, you break know, down the MIDI cool. file, the original MIDI file, and like hear every instrument playing and then just work from there? Or?
Yeah. I started with, it's funny, there's a bunch of different versions of this because right. it was that at that period of time where all these different sound cards existed. So if you look on YouTube, which is really the best place to find this, it took me a while to find the one that I had, which was, I think, the CD-ROM version of the game, which was maybe a little later in like 92 or 93. And I remember realizing it as a kid, if you put the CD-ROM into your CD player, like your just stereo, it would play the soundtrack. And thinking that was so cool. And then I just listened, I probably listened more to the music that I like spent playing the game. I mean, I finished the game, but it's like I listened to the music over and over and over again. And that, so it was like kind of a higher res sound, whereas some of the ones I listened to are really old school and kind of primitive sounding. And then, you know, the one that I knew was like a little more advanced. But I mostly just transcribed it by ear. I didn't like actually get the MIDI file and mm-hmm. break that down, though that would have actually probably been pretty cool and shown some other cool
I don't know
things.
If it would have been easier or harder. It's tough to say. Yeah. But yeah.
And MIDI is always like, I'm like okay at MIDI, but MIDI is always a kind of a. Like
I could have helped you out, man. I could have given you a little tutorial. Anyway, yeah. We could talk about some video games we're playing as
yeah.
well. Why not do that? So I guess preliminarily, I'm just going to say that we are playing Death Stranding because we're allowed to say that we have codes for it, but we are not right. allowed to say anything more, which right. means that the other game that I played, I haven't spent a ton of time on yet. I just kind of took a little break to check out Sayonara Wild Hearts on your recommendation Yay. Because mm-hmm. after last week, I was like, well, this sounds like a game that would be a nice sort of somewhat short palate cleanser mm-hmm. in between playing other things. And that is definitely true. This game, it can also be played in short bursts as well, which I think is a yeah. huge benefit to it, at least for me trying to fit it into a schedule. I got it mm-hmm. on the Switch. So this is a music video game. And the way you described it last week is like, it's like a music video that you play. And mm-hmm. I think that's accurate. We've also described it as an infinite runner. But the other thing about it is that it really lends itself well to repetition. Like, you play these short levels, each mm-hmm. of them is a song. Well, they start out short, they get longer as they go along. But it isn't always obvious what you're supposed to do in a given level. I personally can't get a perfect score on a level the first time around. I feel like that's for the second time around or the billionth time around.
The person who could get a perfect score on the first time is a terrifying person.
I don't know. It might be our video producer, Paul, who's extremely good at this kind of game. I am not that person, however. I'm not getting a perfect score the first time around. I'm getting bronze rank the first time around, and then I'm playing it again. So the game, we actually got an email about this, about how the game doesn't super telegraph what happens, and it's more right. about memorization. The person who wrote in wasn't as much of a fan of that. And I can understand that in playing it. Like, I guess I'll say, like, if you're a person who doesn't like memorizing patterns, I don't actually think this is the game for you, because it mm-hmm. is a game where you're memorizing where this character has to go in a level, what the level looks like after you've played it once. You have to memorize where each of the things are that you collect and the exact route that she needs to take through a level in order to collect as many things as possible and avoid obstacles or projectiles on the way. And mm-hmm. I don't know, it's a lot of repetition. I mean, I don't mind that. For me, that is definitely my kind of game, but I also understand how it might not be everyone's cup of tea.
Yeah, I could see that. I found when I was playing it that my main concern was avoiding the obstacles, because the obstacles stop the music. And yes. I kind of saw that as the sort of spectrum I was working on, was like, how can I keep the groove going?
Right.
And then I think that, and I've watched some high level play and replayed some levels, you know, you can get up to the gold rating. And if you do that, that's very much like memorize everything. And like, because mm-hmm. you can do these amazing routes through the level where you hit every single little gem that you're trying to pick up. Mm-hmm. Where I didn't really care, I just didn't want the music to stop.
Yeah.
And I kind of found, you know, it's interesting that I liked the unpredictability of it mm-hmm. the first time through, because there's a sense that the game is constantly surprising you and throwing new mechanics and new ideas at you.
Yeah.
And occasionally it'll do that in a way where you learn the hard way that, oh, I can die from that. Mm-hmm. And you do die and you like the music, you know, stops and that sort of sucks. But a lot of times, or the most thrilling times, especially when I was kind of in the groove, I just began to kind of feel like I was like sensing where the game was going and what it wanted from me. And, you know, the camera would wheel around and change. And then suddenly she'd, like, there's a part where she, I guess this is a spoiler, but she pulls out a bow and she has like a bow and arrow. And suddenly you're like aiming at things. And I didn't like do it perfectly, but I didn't die from anything. And it was this like really delightful moment of like, what the hell? Oh, okay. And then like over a couple of, you know, like iterations of the idea, I sort of like figured out what was going on and then felt like I like really quickly filed it into my toolkit as I was playing. So I guess at its smoothest, to me, it felt that way. I could definitely see that not working for someone, or like for whatever reason, like one thing comes smoothly and then another thing doesn't, or you're hitting a lot of walls and feeling sort of stuck. The last level is challenging. I think I died more in that level and was like, ah, oh my God. But then that it kind of fits because the last level is like a kind of culminating challenge.
Well, it's the last
challenge.
Level. It's got to be hard, right?
Right. It's the last level.
Also, there's only one button the entire time, I think. So it's like there's only a limited number of actions that you can do. Mm-hmm. Like you can press it quickly for certain actions, or obviously you're using the joystick to move around in addition to using this one button. So it's joystick plus one button. So there's only so much you can do in the game, which I guess could be good or bad depending on whether you like that kind of thing. But I don't know. I'm really enjoying it. I like the music a lot. I haven't beaten it, but it's been something really cool to play in between other things. I don't know if I would like it as much on a phone, though. I haven't tried that, but I really like the look of it.
I played it with a controller on the phone, so it's basically just like playing it on the Switch.
But there are times when you need to be kind of precise, like especially when she's flying through the air and you need to aim yourself through a heart, or like other situations where you need to do some precise jumping. Did you feel like the smaller screen limited your ability to do that stuff?
No, I want to play it on a bigger screen because it would look cool. I did pretty much fine. I do think that I started playing the game with touch controls, and while I've heard they're okay and Smogo knows from phone games, it wouldn't surprise me if like once you get over the learning curve, you can kind of, you know, be okay. I definitely greatly preferred it with a controller. So I do think in that respect, if you play it on a phone, you should probably play it with a controller. I think I would recommend that anyway. But the smaller screen was okay. You know, I think it'd be better on a big screen, but it was okay.
Yeah, I've only played it on the Switch and handheld so far, but I really want to play it on my actual TV just because I feel like that would look really cool, and I haven't done it yet. So I'll try to do that before next week, and I can talk about it then. But anyway, that's the only thing I've been playing that I can talk about. So I guess we can go over to you. What have you been playing, Kirk?
Yeah, it's tricky. I've been playing a bit of Death Stranding too, and I guess I can say that now. These embargoes are always funny, where you can like, okay, you may now mention that you have the game.
That's it.
But it is a thing where like, yeah, I'm trying to play other things as well, just partly because I want to get through them, and like, you know, while I'm playing Disco Elysium and I'm still fascinated by it and think it's a very cool game, so I'm like, want to play that too. But there's only so many hours in the week, so it gets tricky.
Which is messed up, honestly. I don't know why time is finite. I think it's stupid and bad.
Some kind of a conspiracy. Someone is responsible for this. We should rise up in one way or another. Mm-hmm. So I've played more Disco Elysium, not a ton more. I know Jason has finished it, or he finished his first playthrough, which in this game, playthroughs are so wildly variable that you could play it, I think, a bunch
of
times.
He's actually only been playing it for 30 minutes. It's wild. The game is truly wild.
I actually did. I did get a game over, like my character. Well, I'll tell you about it in a second.
Okay.
But Jason and I will talk about it probably more in depth next week when he's back, just because he'll also have played, and he's played more than I have, and I think I'll have played more by then too. But I've been playing more. I think I described it pretty well last week, but I want to like give a little more detail because it remains such an unusual game and so ambitious and cool in so many ways. So I guess the way I got a game over, just to explain what happened, my guy just kind of lost the will to keep going. He just got really sad and lost his motivation, which is something that can happen, because he just became convinced that there was no point and that this was like an intractable conflict and they weren't going to solve it.
Wow.
And I couldn't get him to not think that. And so I had to reload a save from like 2 or 3 like character interactions ago before he like started thinking this, basically, that this was all pointless.
Wow.
And it was really interesting.
There wasn't like a way to change the contents of his brain so that he would stop thinking that.
Because it was kind of a cumulative thing. I think it like started with one conversation, and then he lost his motivation because he screwed up some other interaction. I think motivation is like an actual thing that you have, like and I don't fully understand how it works, but and so it just had this feeling of like, there's still this feeling of unknowability to the game that I'm sure will go away the more I play it and then read about it subsequently, and like people really chart out how all the systems work. But it's definitely one of the most fascinating things about it, is the feeling of like, you know, it feels like playing a role-playing game with an right. actual dungeon master who is a human being and is like just telling a story with you. Mm-hmm. And so anything can happen. It has that kind of magic feeling that I haven't had from a game since, like, I don't know, maybe when I played GTA 4 and didn't understand what was possible and what wasn't possible when I right. first played it.
So it like felt like kind everything of, kind of right. was, and like there were a lot of systems under right. the hood you didn't know about, but there were actually right. only a few systems under right. the hood.
Yeah. And in this case, there are a lot of systems under the hood. Like, yeah. There are, I'm sure, things that are, you can't do and that the game won't react to, but far more than any other game I've played, maybe like ever, you know, it's in terms of role-playing games, it has a lot going on. So, to explain it a little better to people, remember, I recapped this last week, but this is a private detective, not a private detective game, but you're a cop in this kind of steampunk alternate world where there's a whole separate, really complicated political situation. Some of things that like mirror our own world. It's definitely, this game has politics on the mind very, very much to an extent that's almost like jarring or like shocking at times. It's like, wow, these guys are going for it. They're happy to just talk about whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's like you're kind of this down and out alcoholic cop who wakes up in his hotel room and he's on a case trying to solve a murder and he has amnesia, and then you kind of craft him from there, and the whole game is built around systems that are, a lot of them are like your personality traits and are in your brain. And so it's a lot of like role playing on that level,
but you pick dialogue options, right? Like, it's not like you're writing in a dialogue option. You do have to right. pick from a list.
That is, yes, and you pick them, but then you get more obviously or less based on your different skills. One thing that's really helpful in this game, and if anyone's starting with this game and is struggling to get their head around it at first, is to just look at your skill tree and read all of the entries. So that's a piece of advice I would give. There's kind of like, you have a ton of skills, and it'll be like, you know, rhetoric, logic, and then like, I don't know, charms, or there's one that's street smarts, but it has a cool name. I can't remember what it is. Inland Empire, I think is what it's called. And it's like your skill for like understanding the knowledge of the streets. There's a ton of those, and they're all very specific, like personality mind skills. They're not like traditional D&D skills like charisma. I mean, the charisma is kind of there and intelligence is kind of there, but they're much more specific. It's like, you know, actual encyclopedic knowledge is mm-hmm. one of them. And if you go read all the descriptions, it not only explains how your character's like stats work, but it kind of explains the game. It explains the whole idea. If you just read all of them, you have to do a lot of reading, but this game is very text-based, so you read a lot anyway. So that's a good thing to do. I did that, and it really helped me kind of crystallize what was going on. So to break down a situation, this is like how one conversation with a guy in that game worked. I took notes on it, and I'm just going to run down how
okay,
it worked.
Okay, great.
Because it's sort of helpful. It's like, okay, I run into a guy on the street, I'm trying to solve a murder. The murder involves a union dispute. So there's a union that's striking, and then the kind of corporate people from the trading company that the union works for are also there trying to like negotiate, break up the union. The union is making demands that they say are ridiculous. There's a lot of tension. There's a strike going on. There are scabs trying to go in. Like I said, this game like immediately is really like you're in
realistic
very,
and
yeah. It all cuts very close, and you kind of are a cop trying to figure out who killed this guy. So you're mm-hmm. kind of a neutral party, but you're also, you know, trying to figure out what happened.
You're
and
part
you can
of the
take
system,
a side.
Though, man.
Right, you are. Though cops in this world are a little bit less like the actual authority, and they're like more private, and so that's also
weird.
A little bit weird. But yeah, you are a cop, and so you're kind of part of the system. But you're also this kind of alcoholic deadbeat guy who, I think, in the end, can just be like, "Fuck it," and you can definitely be like, "I'm a straight up communist," and like play the character that way, or be like, "No, like the government is right," and like be basically a fascist. I think if you want, like, it really goes in both directions. I'm kind of doing the thing where I try to play it middle of the road, but at mm-hmm. some point I feel like I'm going to go. So, okay, that's the premise for this conversation. Go up to a guy, he's just sitting around talking about stuff, and he kind of implies to you that he knows something about the union. He's just a dude who's out on the street. And so he seems kind of shifty in his like the way that it's emphasizing what he's saying and the things he's saying. Like, you ask him, "Do you know anything about the guy who got killed?" And he's like, "Oh no, I don't know anything." But mm-hmm. even the way he says it seems shifty. And then your drama sense pipes up. This is like in the text window, and it says drama, and it'll be like medium difficulty, passed. So you do like a drama roll, and my guy has like an okay drama skill. So, and then it says
like,
the drama
okay
is like
perceiving drama, like when
exactly,
it's happening.
Yes. Well, both. I think it's both. Like, I think it's both being able to
either
like lie
starting
to people
drama or perceiving
and tell
drama.
When someone's lying. Yeah. And so that's what happens. And so this voice kind of pipes up, and it's like an internal monologue. Like, each of your traits has a character. Like it's like Inside Out or something. That's actually, you know, I just thought of that right now. The Pixar movie Inside Out is sort of like this. It's like you have these little people in your head and they argue sometimes and they turn up and argue with you and make you do things. So your drama person speaks up and is like, that guy's keeping something from you. Mm-hmm. And so then it gives you an option to push him because you pass the test. So otherwise you'd have to just walk away from the conversation. But because you pass it, you push him. So, okay, you push him and he says like, oh, you know, like, all right, I kind of like know the union, but not really. And you push him a little bit more. And eventually he's like, okay, I'm not in the union, but they like me and they get me to do kind of low-key stuff for them sometimes. So then your drama pipes up and it's like, ah, so that's what it was. He was keeping from you that he knows them, but he's also trying to make him himself seem like a bigger deal than he really is. Uh-huh. And then your logic sense pipes up and it's like, this guy doesn't know anything. He's obviously an outsider. And so then it basically, you're getting this information from your own insights in your brain that are contingent on these skills that you've leveled up. And if you didn't level up those skills, different things would be piping up. So the conversation keeps going, like your rhetoric skill can chime in at some point and is like, ah, okay, I know what he's doing because he's talking about the writing that he does. So it's all like any of your character's insights into any given like interaction you have or anything in the world or anything that's happening are all based on these stats that you build up. And it's all these, or not invisible, they're visible roles that are just happening automatically, like stat checks. And then you're interacting with the world in this way. So it's a super dense and complicated thing that I think can go wildly differently. And that's just a tiny conversation with like one random guy.
So can those stat checks ever be wrong? Like, could the drama voice or the logic voice be wrong about somebody and then you determine later like, oh, I made these assumptions based on the information I had at the time, but it turned out that I was wrong? You know what I mean?
My sense is that since it's a stat check, if you pass the stat check, it's not wrong. It's like you
so then you suddenly
the
have Sherlock Holmes powers where you can immediately tell someone's lying and no matter what, you can tell.
Exactly. And there is even like a skill that's like crime scene recreation. If you have it really high, you can like see where the bullets went and stuff and do the Sherlock brain. Mm-hmm. And I think if you fail the check, then it'll tell you, you know, the wrong information or you won't get any information.
But do you know if you fail it or not? Or
it tells you. Yeah, so I guess I don't know this for sure, and maybe the game messes with you. I mean, I get the sense this game surprises in a lot of ways as it goes, so I'm still early, but I get the sense that it doesn't ever lie to you. Like, if you, it won't tell you false information that you think you don't know. It's much more, it's like pretty transparent about how it works. And like I said, there are parts, and I've had this happen, well, once with me, and then Jason mentioned that this happens, where I just loaded the game up and one of my traits began an interaction with me, just totally independent of anyone, and was like trying to tell me that I had to do a thing. It was like I talked to this guy who's like believes in that his own race is like superior to everyone. And I could have taken his like beliefs on race and put them into my subconscious, which would then cause me to like stew on it and it would become a part of my personality, which would make him like me more because I would have subscribed to his belief system, but would also make me a racist. So like, which is like an interesting kind of mechanization of that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. That's like this game. Like I'm saying, this game is like really doing a lot of stuff.
Well,
like
but
this,
so when you logged in, was the trait like, hey, you should think about this guy's thoughts.
And it was like, maybe he's right. And I was like, I don't know. And you have to have a conversation with it and say like, no, I don't think he's right. Which is very like, it's like this really fascinating video gamification of, and that's one example, but of any time someone says to you, like, you know, like, oh, like, you shouldn't wear that shirt. That shirt looks really bad. And you're like, oh, I thought I looked good in that shirt. And then an hour later, you're like, fuck, maybe I look terrible in this shirt. Maybe the shirt sucks. And then you're
like,
no,
like,
I look
yourself,
good.
You're like, no, I like this shirt. And
right.
I chose
like that
the
person's
shirt.
Just a jerk. They're trying to tear me down because they're having a bad day. And you have a whole inner monologue that happens in the game. And like, it's you're actually like having a hostile interaction with one of your own personality traits, which is just nuts. And I think Jason mentioned this, and I don't know how this happens yet, but that then later there are times where your two personality traits will be having an argument with themselves, and you'll be like weighing in and kind of issuing the final word, which is also so interesting. So
that sounds good.
It's really, really cool. I mean, it's just as a thing, like, what the fuck even is this? So I continue to be impressed by it. And like I said, I haven't had a ton more time to play, but I've played enough more to now I basically get it, and I can't wait to play more, especially given that Jason tells me it's just fantastic throughout and ends well.
So, I'm pretty mad that I don't have infinite time to play every game I want to play.
And Outer Worlds, everyone says Outer Worlds is amazing, and
Gita's
like that comes out on Friday.
That just went up. It's a very good review, and apparently it is also a very political game that's about some similar themes, but it's a very different kind of game, and sounds really good, but
it's nice that all these games are this interesting, or like willing to be this narratively interesting, and also, but it's another like 30-40 hour RPG, and I'm like, oh, come on.
I gotta somehow play all these games before it's goatee season, though, because we gotta talk.
Oh, that's right, you gotta weigh in on
goatees eventually, games of the year, as it were,
right?
Anyway,
G's OTY. I think I would always write it that way. Is that insufferable because it's games of the year and not game of the year?
Do you say G's OTY? Is that what you're saying?
As a joke. It's like when someone goes and orders four Whoppers Jr. It's that kind of thing. It's like, I'm kind of kidding, but
No one does that, dude. Anyway, I guess this is a short what are we playing, because we're capable of talking about one game that we're playing, but we can leave it there. And we are going to go have a conversation with Natalie DeGraffenried, new Kotaku staffer, about Ring Fit Adventure.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
And we are back, this time joined with a guest, and it is Natalie DeGraffenried, staff editor at Kotaku.com, who's never been on the show before. Hey. Welcome, Natalie, to Split Screen.
Yay, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, I'm glad to finally get you on the show. I've enjoyed your work very much since you started earlier this year. You're one of the new hires that I didn't get to overlap with, so I just get to read your stuff from afar.
I know, it's great to finally chat with you.
We've managed to have Joshua Rivera on twice and Natalie on not at all. So like, I know. It's
finally
really messed
evening,
up. We're
evening
finally
things out.
Evening the scores. We're gonna have to have you on a second time, Natalie, or else it's gonna be wildly unfair.
I'm
accusation
keeping score
of favoritism. It's gonna be horrible.
I just didn't want to seem too eager, guys. I get it.
I totally
to
get it.
It.
Just coming
it.
On like weeks and weeks and weeks after you've been working at the site. Anyway, I also happen to know that in addition to Steven, you are the other person at Kotaku who has been playing Ring Fit Adventure, which is how about you just explain to us what this game is and how it works.
So Ring Fit Adventure is Nintendo's latest ploy to get people exercising in their own homes. I say that as a joke. It's actually pretty good. I've been liking it a lot. And in fact, I am the second of three people at Kotaku who are playing Ring Fit Adventure.
Paul Tamayo, of course, Paul.
Always up for a challenge.
Ring Fit
Paul.
Adventure. Nice. And so he's been he's been doing that too. I aggressively messaged him to ask him what his stats were like. But yeah, so basically, there are different game modes. The main one is sort of like an adventure RPG sort of deal. And you're actually like physically jogging in place to move through the levels, and there are enemies you can fight, and you fight the enemies by doing things like squats or chair pose. So there's like a
with
mix
motion
of different
controls, right? So the reason it's called Ring Fit is because there's a ring. Which
there's
you
a ring
can explain.
And it makes you
fit. Yeah.
Right.
So there's an adventure. Done. Explained.
Wow. Very straightforward title.
There it is. So there's a ring and it has some resistance to it. So you can press the ring in or pull it out and there's some resistance. So depending on how you hold the ring, you can hold it over your head, you can hold it behind your head, and it'll work different parts of your arms, your abs. I found out the other night that my lats are horribly weak and I'm really embarrassed about it. But yeah, so you run in place, and then there's also a sensor on your leg. So you put one of the Wii remotes in the ring, or one part of one of Wii
Joy-Cons.
One of the Joy-Cons.
They're not called Wiimotes anymore. They're called Joy-Cons.
We were just talking about Wii Fit, and I got the Wii on the brain.
You
put one of the Joy-Cons into the actual ring, and you put the other one, you strap it to your leg, which has been a little bit of a challenge for me because I have gigantic thighs. So it constantly slides, but it's like fine. It doesn't really actually affect the gameplay at all. But yeah, so you you run through the levels, and if you press the ring in, you can shoot air at like your surroundings. So it's kind of like sort of a virtual reality-esque thing. It's definitely not VR, but you can kind of like, based on where you move the ring, you can aim it. And I'm physically moving right now, even though you can't see me on this podcast. But you can shoot at things, and then you have these random encounters like an RPG. And in those, that's where you are able to choose moves like your squat or your crunches or chair pose.
Got it.
And you attack the enemies.
And if you can't do enough squats or do chair pose long enough, then the enemy defeats you, which just seems really demoralizing to me. I know that you guys keep saying this game is good, but it I like to exercise, and it sounds kind of like it's hell, maybe.
So I mean, you can choose different difficulties, right? So like there are ways to kind of calibrate. Like I chose intense to start off with. There's like, I think the highest one is called like extreme. I have to double check on that, but I was like, oh, like, okay, y'all are going for it here. Like, I guess that's like the TRX level.
At least they don't have difficulty modes that are, I mean, do they insult you with the difficulty modes as other games are wanting?
Because
I feel like in this context, it would be so much worse.
They're very gentle. They're very like safety oriented. So they're like, oh, if you feel you can't do this, you know, like don't overexert yourself. Do what feels comfortable. And they also have like a test for you at the beginning, like squeeze the ring as hard as you can or pull the ring as hard as you can. So there are like ways that they actually test your fitness level. And based on that, so say you're at, for example, like a low fitness level and you choose intense. The way I believe it works is that they'll give you something that would be intense for somebody
for
at
you.
Your fitness level.
Got it.
Yeah,
that's
and then difficulty
cool.
is like adjusted based on purely on how hard the workout is, right? Like the game part of it is so contingent on the workout. Like it isn't like the game can become more difficult without it also becoming a more difficult workout, or can it?
So Steven's theory on this, and I think he's right, is that the enemies get more health or your attacks do less damage if you have the difficulty higher. So for example, like the squats, I think there are like 30 squats in an attack for like 30 reps of squats. And you go through and do all the squats, and each squat itself does a certain amount of damage.
Right.
So I think based on, I think it actually changes the damage that you can do. And it's funny because the enemies look like little Dr. Mario, like, like germs, but I think it changes the amount of damage that you actually do.
Got it. I struggle sometimes when I'm doing crunches and like even listening to a podcast or have other information coming in.
Yeah.
Like I find that throws me off, and I'm imagining doing crunches and each time it's like, bah, bah, like each time there's some enemy like taking damage. But I could also see how the narrative, like the bigger narrative part of it could be really motivating and make you be like, all right, I want to get back into my adventure tonight. And like, you know, of course, then you're also feeling better. Does that, I guess, what do you think of either of those two things? The moment-to-moment distraction and the big picture, like, motivation?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It kind of gets me into it because, like, so there's music playing too, right?
And is it good music?
It's decent music. Like, it's not
Nintendo
like,
usually
I'm not gonna,
has good music. Yeah.
You know, and it's. I feel like Nintendo is very good at background music. It's like, I'm not going to download this and actively listen to it, but, like, while it's playing, I'm real happy about it, you know? Like,
Yeah, it's kind of perfect for that specific thing. Like,
They were really thoughtful about that. Like even the mini music, I was like all energized from my workout and did my little cool down, and then afterward the mini music was playing and I was still moving. I'm like, okay, wow, you know, just like snapping, like feeling myself for completing my workout, breaking a sweat, you know.
So the cool down is an important part, like psychologically and physiologically.
Yeah. But no, I find that, so the music is playing and then the enemies are also kind of bouncing to the rhythm of the music. And so I already find myself kind of in that rhythm. And so doing it, like working out while that's happening, like I find myself like, okay, I'm just going to do crunches to the rhythm and that feels good. Or I'm going to do squats to the rhythm and that feels good. I don't find it really distracting at all for the most part. Mm.
Yeah, I kind of want to, you're making me kind of want to play this game.
It does sound, you should play cool. This game. I'm not going to, like, it's pretty solid.
Is it expensive? You have to, like, get the ring and the game, right?
It was $80.
Okay, it's only a little bit more. I mean, I bought a Labo that I never even built any of the Labo things, so I could probably buy this, too.
Right,
I'm
like a sucker for standard dumb Nintendo stuff.
Or maybe cool Nintendo stuff. This actually sounds like it's cool Nintendo stuff.
This is actually pretty cool. I was surprised because I hate it. Like, I hate it, to be honest, most of, like, the previous Wii Fitness stuff.
Yeah, we got to talk about this. So did you play Wii Fit at all? Because I had to review it, actually. Went back, way back when I worked at the Boston Phoenix. I got a Wii Fit scale. I had to review this game for my job. And did either of you actually play it or no?
I played roughly 30 seconds of it as someone's home and did not like it.
Was this, so I didn't, I don't think, but I'm trying to think, my main understanding of Wii Fit was reading about it after the fact, because I think it came out before, I didn't have a Wii, and I like kind of wasn't writing about video games or into them at the time that it came out, and then when I was at Kotaku, I think the stat that I saw was some staggering sales statistic on that game. Like, it was the most successful Wii game ever, even though people who like video games or whatever always kind of deride it as this ridiculous thing. I think it was like, it's ultra popular with that huge...
With like the Wii, boomer
the people
crowd
who all
that
had Wiis.
Bought a Wii and was willing to drop hundreds of dollars on a piece of exercise equipment that was functionally useless.
Did it use the balance board? Or
its main selling point was that it had an extremely precise scale. I don't know if that's true. I simply remember that was its strongest marketing selling point.
It's like, I want a PS2 because it has a DVD player.
It was like that, but
Nintendo is selling you, really good at selling you things you never asked for.
Well, but it's kind of like, they developed this super accurate scale. It could weigh you very accurately. However, the game was predicated on like BMI, which the body mass index has a lot of problems. And at the time I was actually dating a guy who was super tall and super muscular, and it immediately clocked him as overweight and was like, need to be working on your weight, sir. And I was like, this game sucks.
He's like, F you, like, game.
Like right out of the gate, we both were like, this is bad. Like this game is already wrong and like isn't providing the type of concern and help that an actual real personal trainer or nutritionist could provide you. So like right out of the gate, that sucked. Right. Scale was very accurate about measuring your weight, wasn't accurate about what it told you what to do with that information. But the other problem with the game was that most of the things that it would tell you to do would be things that like you didn't really need the Wii Fit scale to have you do. Like you could like do a yoga pose on the scale, but like anything significant would break it. So the game would be like, here's a move we need you to do, but we need you to step off the scale in order to perform it and just look at this picture on the screen of someone performing this move, and there'd be like no record of the fact that you performed it because there wouldn't really be a way to functionally do that, because this was, you know, there wasn't the Ring Fit, which I assume is measuring your movements in these very specific ways, and the Wiimotes had some motion controls but not really the ability to measure something like, are you doing a yoga pose or like some type of lunge correctly or not, or like squats or any of those things. Like there's no way to know if you're doing that stuff right other than just looking at, you know, the Wii Fit trainer on the screen and seeing if you're doing it right or not. So it's like basically a very expensive scale and a very expensive set of exercise videos that were not super motivating or well done at all. And it was just overall a disappointment to me. And I remember I felt similarly about a lot of the other sort of like, there was a Wii boxing game that came in Wii Sports, and there was like
that
Katana game, like Red Steel or whatever it was called. Like I had all these ideas when the Wii came out about how I was going to like exercise all the time with my Wiimotes, and then that never happened. But I kind of fell off the wagon with that idea. I never like, you know, got a copy of Just Dance. I never like got super into DDR, whereas Natalie, it sounds like you did do those things.
So this is why I brought Paul Tamayo up earlier. Like this is, we had a jinx moment because we both said, like, almost in the exact same way, like, yeah, I'm pretty sure I was athletic as a youth because of, like, Dance Dance Revolution.
Yeah.
Like, and honestly, like, I would break a serious sweat playing that game. My mom came in and clowned me, like, you sitting up here sweating playing it? Like, my mom literally would come in, like, what are you doing?
Did you have one of those little at-home pads that you had to, like, unfurl?
I did. I had one of the horrible cheap ones, too.
Oh,
so
man.
It was basically, like, a little piece of plastic.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't good.
And, like, I couldn't play it on, I couldn't play it on hardwood, one, because my feet would be sore,
and it would
two,
slip.
Because I would, like, slide.
Yeah,
right?
Dangerous.
So I had to play it on carpet. And it was so random. Like, I had the version, was it Max 2? I had the version that had Sean Paul on it, like, Get Busy. And I was like, why is this?
It's motivational.
Like,
you're, like, listening to that
right,
song every like, day over and over and over again, just because you're learning
right,
to dance the
like,
routine to
it. Yeah, it was so silly, but I really enjoyed it, and I would also go out into arcades mm-hmm. and look like a fool because
right.
I could actually like dance a little bit, but there's no way to look even remotely like cool as a person like playing
DDR
Dance Dance Revolution
right.
Like there's no way. But
people have
even
tried.
Still,
like I never got into it, but a different ex of mine was super into like DDR tricks that you could do using the bar. I've dated some very
yeah,
quality people,
like the spins.
Yeah,
and all
you
the,
can like use the bar at the back of the DDR thing and like kind of break dance and like also do the moves that you need to do in the game. There's
I
a
feel
scene
like the
for that.
Scene the scene in Scott Pilgrim versus the World where
yeah.
they're like
yeah,
dancing
no,
together. It's
exactly,
like the closest
with knives.
Yes.
That's like if Edgar Wright directs you and you have stunt coordinators, then you can maybe look kind of cool playing DDR. But other than that, probably
I feel
not.
Like that
gosh,
that energy
you know,
like, is
you just
like
have to...
coming back though with the lightsaber VR game that like all
yeah,
my friends
yeah.
keep trying
oh, yeah,
to sell me.
Oh yeah, I was
going to
bring those
on.
Up, but I want to hear a little more about DDR.
I actually would like to play that. But no, like I remember in the tutorial for DDR, there was something like swing your arms big, mm-hmm. it'll make you look cool. And I was like, will it? Like, will it actually?
That's,
like, are you lying to
game.
Me? Like, there's some poor kid in the world who's like, yeah, and then goes to the arcade and does it.
I look so cool.
And then,
goes to the school dance,
and then that kid,
tries to look
right,
cool.
From now on, that kid is DDR Dan. Like,
yeah,
that,
oh,
you're not going to lose that nickname.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Don't lie to these kids,
DDR.
DDR
contributed to a lot of bullying, most likely, back in the day.
I mean, but no, it's funny you brought up the Scott Pilgrim because that was like, I was like, this is like, I would actually love like if you could do something
yeah.
like this in a real game.
Mm.
But like then you'd have to be like an expert in fight choreography,
right.
which like,
right,
you know,
spend a lot of time away from the game coordinating with your partner to like do the roll. Doesn't she like roll over his back in
yeah,
the middle of it or something?
Does.
And then there's some pretty
she
amazing
does.
Moves.
I mean, you could definitely put the time in to do that. I,
sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I always had a lot of respect for people who were super into DDR at some level because it does look very cool if you're like at an arcade and somebody's doing extremely well at DDR. I don't mean like from a it
yeah.
looks cool for them to be dancing well. I just mean from a sheer
right.
speed perspective. Were you ever that level of DDR where you'd be like
I
at the arcade and people be
DDR.
Lining up around you and like being like, wow, look.
So, yeah, I was actually pretty solid at DDR. I couldn't do like the...
I can't remember the
there
difficulty
like,
names in DDR
like the,
either. But.
Yeah, I think it went up to like maybe 10 feet, like 10 or 12 feet. I could get up to like a solid 8 and do pretty well.
So that's like the size of the board as your that you have to cover?
No, it was like measured. I think it was a scale from like 1 to 10. And I feel like it was like feet. So it was like 1 foot to
feet
like
icons.
I think
oh, I see.
It was.
Okay.
Yeah, like little icons.
Not feet, like the measurement.
Oh, feet. I get it. I get
the
it.
The measurement
this is just
within DDR.
An abstract that's measurement right. system and not like a unit of distance.
Right. Like the feet that you're moving.
Yeah.
Right.
You
got
to move
course,
10
of course.
Feet in order to complete specific DDR levels. And
got
Natalie
it,
had 10 feet,
it.
So that was easy.
Yeah. As a youth, actually, they were surgical. Removed
right
you know after a certain point in my life
it was just one of the many DDR things that didn't look as cool as you wanted it to look at the time
right. great benefit in the game but kind of awkward outside of the game.
Yeah, right. But yeah, I mean, rhythm games, like, I had that. I also had Guitar Hero. Mm-hmm. I was one
not
of those
an
kids.
Exercise game, but nonetheless an aspirational
unless
game.
You play drums in Rock Band.
Right.
That was the first time, actually, I got... I didn't get into Guitar Hero, but I did get into Rock Band, which is actually how I learned drums initially. Like, I already played other instruments, but then I started playing the drums in that game.
Yeah.
It was close enough. Whatever,
mm-hmm.
that's a whole separate story. But I remember playing that and getting into it, and, like, then just playing on my own some and just getting into the drum parts. And I would play all night and get really sore and be be kind of working up a sweat. But it's not a great workout because it's so asymmetrical.
Like
your right hand is doing hi-hat stuff, and so your right arm gets like really tired. I think actually like drummers run into this too. Your right leg gets all like differently, and you get a lot of balance. So it's not designed for a workout. And it sounds like Ring Fit Adventure is like designed to work out. Like it seems like it's better designed. I'm thinking about all of these games. Like I reviewed the Kinect, the Xbox One, which is, you know, super Kinect centric.
Right.
They had they had like workout games for the first Kinect, but I never really played them. But then I remember that they were pushing it more because every Xbox One came with a Kinect. And it was like, okay, you're going to have this camera and it can like scan your body. So if you're doing like a yoga thing, it can really tell you, oh, you're like, kind of out of balance. I don't really remember. It was kind of weird. It didn't launch with a great yoga app. It was like one of those kind of cuddy looking free things, or that sort of comes with it. There's like a picture of a generically attractive like trainer person kind of sitting there and looking like a stock photo model. And like I don't know. Like I remember playing it and not really getting into it, and then just immediately falling off of it. But I also don't know about yoga in general. Like you mentioned that with Wii Fit. Like, yoga is just, it's a weird thing for a camera to be telling you, like, no, you're 6 degrees off of holding your leg. And like, that's not really what yoga's about either. Like, it's like, you come to it and it comes to you. It's more about like finding your own balance. So it seems
I would agree with that. Because I do a lot of yoga. I do a lot of different workouts outside of work.
You do.
You're really inspiring me right now.
Yeah, like literally, like Maddie can tell you, literally every time I'm like leaving Slack
every day.
I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go do XYZ workout now. Bye.
All right, gotta go to CrossFit. Gotta go do my
volleyball. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, but no, like I think that like the yoga poses I have unlocked so far, like chair pose, have kind of made sense. Like chair pose in particular was interesting for me because like my shoulders are a little bit of a mess from volleyball. Mm-hmm. So it was like, oh, like I know for a fact that I've always been doing this wrong, and now like it was actually pretty precise in telling me how I was doing chair pose wrong. In terms of
how
my
could
arms
it tell?
Were.
Yeah, like did you where
you hold the ring? You hold the ring up above you, and for that one, they have you like hold the ring up and then bring it down, back down in front of you. Like you hold it directly over your head because chair pose, like basically, for those who don't know what chair pose is, you get into it's sort of like a squat. Yeah. It looks very much like a squat, and your arms are straight up above your head. So yeah, you hold the ring over your head, and it detects where the ring is relative to the rest of your body. And I think I'm imagining the Joy-Con strapped to your leg is also doing a little bit of work there.
Is being factored in some way in the calculation. Right, right. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. But I mean, there are a lot of different ways to kind of move around and like not be and kind of like mess with how you're doing the exercise. But I found that generally is pretty good about that. I don't know that it would be super useful for people who don't exercise a lot. Mm. So like for me, I exercise like a lot. So I know like the proper form for a squat. Mm-hmm. And they do give you tips, but like starting out in your workout, like a big part of that is like gaining body awareness. Mm-hmm. And without like, for example, like a mirror to see yourself, it might be hard to actually implement some of those tips. So they do put a lot of time into telling you what the right form is, telling you common tips to common things that people mess up. But I don't know how good it would be for people who are really like, oh, you know, I'm totally new to a workout. And I do think the beginner modes would probably be able to help with things like that. There are some very like squeeze the ring in, like that's a very straightforward, you can't really mess that up, but some of the other poses, I'm not so sure. But, you know, again, I think that probably like what you get probably depends on the intensity that you choose.
Yeah.
So there are also mini games too, like little offshoot mini games. Like there's one there's one where you it's super weird, actually. You're like basically like swinging this gigantic bat at these robots.
And sounds great.
Like it's made sort of like an oar. So like you're holding the ring and you have to you're holding the ring against your stomach, and like you're pressing it against your stomach is like an ab exercise. And then you have to basically pivot your hips either left or right to swing either side of the bat forward. And it's like you hit the robots, and it's like, so there are a bunch of little mini games like that you can just do for like 20 seconds, 30 seconds, a minute, just for a high score, in addition to the regular adventure mode. So there are a bunch of things that you can do to target your whole body. And I found it like a lot of fun, actually.
Yeah, it's cool that the way that they're kind of using the peripheral. I like thinking about, okay, so the Kinect could see you and it could show you on the screen, which is nice.
Right.
Like the thing you were talking about with like body awareness and being able to see yourself a little bit.
And
this game can't do that.
Right.
But you can only do so many different workout things without a physical thing. Like having a ring to squeeze forward and like do reps of actually with something that can give you resistance is just easier. It can like tell you to do push-ups or something, but that's like not, that's about as far as it goes if you only have a camera.
Go do a push-up and then come back.
Right. I do think, don't you think, I feel like it's only a matter of time before someone mods this thing and like beats Dark Souls using just the ring or something.
Oh,
like every time you squeeze the ring, he does a light attack.
Oh,
and like
people do that with like guitar controllers and stuff like that. Like,
I feel like people have beaten Dark Souls with every possible controller, so that's only a matter of time before that happens with this thing.
I was telling Steven I'm waiting for the two player one ring fit.
Yes.
Oh man.
That's
yes.
another way to like do a cooperative
like
ring
the
fit.
Speed
things.
Runs.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that would be a way to do it. So I do want to ask like bigger picture what you think about the idea of just exercise being a game generally. Like obviously, like in theory it's a good thing that this game has, say, a mini game that lets you add more points onto your score by doing one more exercise, but with the personality that I have, for example, that stuff can be a very dark path for me. And I always have to be aware of that when I'm exercising and be like, am I just doing this because I want the numbers to get higher and it's becoming an obsessive thing for me? Or am I like doing this from a healthy place? I don't even know if that's a factor for you, but what do you think about that?
No, I mean, I think about this a lot because I just think about the way that people react to video games a lot, because people are like, oh, the gamification of exercise. And I'm like, have you heard of sports?
Yeah. Exercise is a game already.
Video games are like the video gamification of sports.
it's been gamified for millennia.
Right.
That was actually how it started. But yeah, sure. We're finally getting back
to the Olympics.
You know, like, and it to me is very similar to the conversation of like, why would you just sit and watch someone stream?
Right.
Like, okay, Sue, so are you going to grab a basketball in the middle of winter and actually go play yourself?
Yeah.
Or are you just going to like,
you're just going to sit there and watch somebody play basketball?
Right. Yeah. Like, how's that fun? Like, okay. You know, so for me, it's like a lot of the same thing, and I do think that it can be good for habit building in a particular way, right? So, like Steven was saying this in his review, but like it actually is really helpful to get me to do exercises I don't like. Like I exercise a lot, but for example, parts of my arms are way weaker than other parts, and to the point where I'm able to compensate for that a lot of the time.
Yeah,
and so like with Ring Fit, like I'm able to like give myself some other incentive to do it that's a lot of fun.
And it's keeping you honest in terms of like working out all of your arms as opposed to just the parts you want to work out.
Right. And like there's, I don't know, like you could probably change the difficulty settings if you're that like, oh my God, like I'm too tired to do this properly, but I want to keep working out.
Right.
You could probably change the difficulty settings, but like they do, like in my workout, I worked out for like 25 minutes last night and they were like, maybe you should take a break so you could do more tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like cool, you
very
know,
Nintendo
like
thing
I right, exactly, like classic, like, do you want a break?
Yeah. No, Nintendo, I don't want a break. Stop judging me.
That might have actually been the first time in my history of playing Nintendo games that I did, in fact, take a break.
Right,
oh,
yeah.
Nice.
When they prompted me to take a break.
How was it? You took Nintendo's advice. Was that good? Was it like good experience in the end? Do you recommend doing that? I never take Nintendo's advice either.
Oh, boy.
You know, I mean, in this case, no, I could have kept working out.
Okay.
But you don't have a problem
with
having done that.
It's like when Netflix asks if you're still there. Are you still watching? Shut up, Netflix. Yes, I'm on my fifth episode of The Good Wife. Leave me alone.
Right. I realize this is unreasonable amount of time watching.
Don't judge me.
But
it's kind of the opposite of that. It's like, are you sure you want to keep being motivated and working out? I think about when I... So one thing that I find with workout is like... the more in shape I get, and I go, you know, sometimes I'm in good shape and sometimes I'm not. And the more in shape I get, the more I need to do to like feel good.
Yeah.
Or I think that that's at least a kind of a common thing. I'm always trying to find a balance, but it's kind of like an endorphin thing. Like you just don't get as many endorphins from doing the same kind of workout.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
Video games kind of have this, the same structure sometimes where, you know, like you're a higher level and then the game gets harder. And so you need to like play more to get more stuff. But they don't have the kind of physiological thing like in a workout where you know, your actual body is changing. And so the amount that you need to do to like get it to, you know, to where you need it to be in a given day is just like very different because you're physically different, where the game can just inflate the numbers kind of artificially and say, you know, so it's kind of an, it's kind of a crucial distinction, I guess. But would you find, do you think you could find that if you need to do more and more intense workouts as you go, the game is eventually like having you do like hour and a half long sessions? Like, is there a ceiling on this game? And then at some point you're just going to have to go get a trainer or something, or does it just keep expanding in that way?
So I'm not sure, but I do feel like based on some of the challenges I've seen, it could keep expanding because, so for example, like outside of the adventure mode, there are, play challenges or like there's like a challenge play mode, and some of them are like, how many times can you squeeze the remote or squeeze the ring in a certain amount of time, and through that you can work your muscles to exhaustion at your level. So there are things like that which are like, I mean, you know, like obviously if you're in like insane shape, there could be a point where that does not faze you. But there are ways that you can kind of step out and keep escalating it yourself, like via the mini games or the challenge mode. And I would imagine there's probably a way to do that with the adventure mode too. I'm still working through the adventure mode right now. But there definitely are ways in the game to kind of keep doing that sort of thing. And it's been a lot of fun to kind of do that because I'm like the first, and I don't know, like it's like I'm ignoring things that I know about working out as I get excited to try these challenges because I tried one of them once and like it's kind of the standard video game thing where like, okay, I do it the first time and then I don't do it as well as I could. Let me try it again. But this is literally an exercise.
This is like what Maddie was talking about.
And like, and like in the first half of it, I'm like, oh yeah, like I'm at a better pace. Now I'm going to get a higher score. And then my muscles started to get tired and it was like, oh no, I'm not.
Yeah. It's almost like the opposite of what happens in a normal video game where you do get better as you go. But in this case, you actually get tired as you go. That's
right. I'm thinking about the games where like my thumbs have literally become damaged because I've been like going so hard at something. And that does happen, like fighting games where I'm on the D-pad a bunch and then I start to sort of get calluses. Then it's like, oh, I have to take a break, which is a very minor physical activity, but the same idea.
Yeah.
That happened to me recently with Celeste. I was I was playing the final chapter with Joy-Cons, which
using the D-pad, right?
Which also had drift, by the way. I completed final chapter.
That's the extra difficulty
Now on the podcast.
That's like true bragging,
right? Extra chapter.
Yeah,
of Celeste with Joy-Con drift.
Wow.
But yeah, like I, you know, it's the sort of thing where it's like the fact that I got a lower ranking the second time made me not want to do it again. Like normally when I don't get it, like I was saying this to Paul too. Like if this was a pure rhythm game, I would probably never put it down because like the way I am, I always want to get like the perfect ranking like it's easier to do that when that's based on things like precision versus
or like pattern memorization.
And so like I was like, if this were actually like a pure rhythm game, I probably would get like straight up addicted to it in the same way that I've like tried to get perfect scores on like Citus Alpha or like whatever, you know, or like on some of the DDR games when I was younger. Like I could easily see that happening. But yeah, with this, it's like when I get an A rank the first time and a B rank the second time, I feel like a scrub. I'm like, okay, I'm going to try again tomorrow.
I need a break to get back to where I was.
I'm not going to keep like recording like bad reps for my pecs or whatever.
Yeah, totally. I feel like we should check in with you again in a few weeks and find out if you're still as into this game. Cause I feel like I have diminishing returns on exercise games a lot. So I guess we can leave it there and I'll definitely report back. I'll find out from you, Natalie, if you're still playing this in a few weeks.
If you are, maybe I'll go out and buy it. We'll see. I'm sort of intrigued by this though. It sounds kind of fun.
I'm with it.
It does sound really good.
And we'll send each other gifts. You can earn gifts and send people gifts.
Oh man, all right. Now that's even more convincing.
Now I'm interested. Now I'm in. Yeah, that's great. So thanks so much for coming on the show, Natalie.
It was awesome to have you.
Yeah, thanks
a lot. This is a fun chat.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping
dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
And we are back for some off-topic discussion to close out the show. And I believe I have to go first again because we're both going to talk about Watchmen in a second, but I'm going to get my off-topic thing out of the way first, which is, so, you know, they're rebooting Charlie's Angels or making sort of a weird sequel to Charlie's Angels that has Kristen Stewart and a bunch of other famous actresses in it. Mm-hmm. And I don't actually think it's out yet, but it is coming. And this movie is supposedly a sequel or takes place in the same world as the other two Charlie's Angels movies, which were like 2000 and 2003, and which are on Netflix now for some reason. So I decided to watch them. These movies are not good. I don't necessarily recommend them, but I really disliked them at the time because, you know, I was a self-hating internalized misogynist in the year 2000 and didn't even watch the second movie because things with female characters in them were dumb to me and stupid and frilly and shouldn't be engaged with on any level, which I think is how a lot of people felt about action movies, women-led action movies in the 2000s. I don't think this was an uncommon thing. But that's part of why the movies are pretty interesting to watch, because these movies cannot figure out how to be an action movie with a whole bunch of women in it because they both want you to be sexually attracted to all of these women at every moment. The camera leers at their every orifice at all times, and they all are wearing skin-tight leather, of course. They look great. But the movie also wants you to laugh at them because they are stupid. They're all ditzy and they can kind of barely do their jobs or be competent on any level. But then at the same time, they're also wildly, fantastically competent and can do anything. So they're like, it's a comedy movie that's sort of like post Austin Powers vibe where the lead character is like an idiot, but in this case, but also like a wildly competent one himself. Right. But in this case, it's like a bunch of female leads, but it has that same weird sexual tone where the movie just can't decide what it wants to do. And that's kind of amazing and just a reflection of the weird gender politics of movies at that time period that I think we've finally managed to get out of, where it's like, yeah, you can have a superhero movie that's starring a woman and like, maybe she's funny, maybe she isn't. It doesn't, she could be a lot of different kinds of things, but this movie like couldn't even decide what tone it wanted to have. And also it was just deeply funny to me that the movie wanted the audience to be attracted to these women because like the target market for Charlie's Angels could never be straight men. So I feel like the weird result of it is like only queer women could like this movie
It's
like, who is this for? Like the straight guys who watch this movie aren't going to be like, oh, I want to be Lucy Liu. And I mean, okay, maybe they are, but you know what I mean? Like that fantasy doesn't quite work, but like they're attracted to them, but also it's wildly uncool to see a movie with this many women in it. So it's for women, but it has to be for women who are attracted to women. It just like created this like really funny thing where I feel like it's like a cult hit with queer women. And I don't know.
That's so funny.
It's a very funny situation, but it's not a good film. Neither of them are good.
I watched the first one, I think, and not the second one. And I remember it was kind of like a fun romp or something. It was on HBO.
It has funny jokes in it. It has terrible jokes in it as well.
And like Drew Barrymore is great. I mean, I like all three of those actresses, but
Drew Barrymore they're all is great. I feel like the movie doesn't really give them the full opportunity to be as great as you know they are going to be in the rest of their careers. So that part of it is kind of uplifting. Like you watch it and you're like, oh, all three of you are going to get way better roles later. You're all going to be great after this. But for now, you have to do this shit. And don't worry,
that's
you
funny.
Three.
It's funny that you put it in the context of Austin Powers. I wouldn't have thought of that, but that totally tracks.
It really reminded me of it. Like watching it, it took me back.
Right. Without the like lascivious dude at the center, it kind of like fucks up the balance that kind of worked in Austin Powers. Like without that though, something it's like, oh wait, we don't know what we're doing at all. Like this doesn't work. It's like,
wait, we don't really know how to humanize these characters and like have them be relatable. Right. But it like almost has that energy because like Sex and the City was popular at the time as well, kind of. So there's that sense of like, okay, sure, women hang out and talk about sex and like tell jokes, but it doesn't really feel like conversations women would actually have because the movie's not well written at all. So it's just like it's not good. Anyway, it was really funny to watch it.
Nice.
And anyway, we're also both rereading Watchmen, a very different thing. But I would love to hear your thoughts on it. I've watched the pilot for the HBO show, but let's talk about the book for a second.
Yeah, let's talk about the book. So I haven't watched the pilot yet. I know I've heard good things about it. I want to hear your your like spoiler-free impressions of it.
I'll try.
But yeah, I've been rereading the book for the first time in a long time, and in longer than I realized. Now that I'm reading it, I'm like, wow, I didn't remember so much of this. Just because I want to read the whole thing.
Had you seen the movie, by the way? I'm just curious of your timeline.
I read the book before the movie came out. Mm. That was the first time I read it. And it was very much, when I read it, I read comics growing up, but I've never been like a huge comics person. And I was an adult, you know, I was in my 20s or something. It was before I worked at Kotaku, but shortly before. And I was like entering the sort
the
of
nerd,
geek,
zone.
Nerd space, the nerd zone, like professionally. And people were like, oh yeah, read Watchmen. It's, you know, really good. And I read it and I got it. I didn't think that it was just some wham bam superhero, you know, comic, but mm-hmm. I didn't get it to the extent that I do now. I think some of that was just that I was a lot younger and like didn't understand the 1980s and the Cold War and...
Or maybe the comics it was commenting on as well.
Right. Yeah. Or even just people, like understanding adult humans better, as because I'm like older now reading this book. It's got so much just like flawed humanity in it. Oh my God. Yeah. It's like so what it's about. So anyways, that's like the backstory. And I just didn't remember a lot of it. I remember the particulars. I remember like the squid. I remember thinking the ending was weird and like, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, the twist at the end and Ozymandias and like Dr. Manhattan. I remember mm-hmm. thinking, oh, this is like showing me cool new things about comics. But in terms of just all the particulars of it, it really feels fresh reading it. So I guess, man, where to begin? One thing that I really like about it, this is just sort of a random thing to pick, but is all the world building and almost like the feelies that's happening. Like, you know, the feelies they would give you pack-ins with adventure games that were like little things you could take out. The way that this comic will very frequently, or graphic novel, I guess, whatever you want to call it, will frequently just go to these entirely text-based.
Yes.
Like
between
an excerpt from
each
a book.
Chapter, there'll be an excerpt from an in-universe book or piece of media. Like there's an article about a comic book that only exists within mm-hmm. the world, for example.
I recently read that one. Yeah. And that comic is introduced to you totally without context. And it's this wild pirate comic, because in this world, superhero comics weren't a thing and pirate comics became the big
thing. So I guess we should explain what Watchmen is. Just in case somebody has what the premise of this comic is. But it takes place in a world, it's Alan Moore, I can't remember the artist's name, which is horrible because I actually love the art. Look that up while I'm explaining
this. Yeah, look that
up
while you explain.
Art's great, writing's great. So it is set in a world, it's set in an alternate version of 1985, I believe, but it's set in a world where superhero comics existed until the 20s, but those comics inspired actual real life people to just become superheroes and vigilantes. And so then there were like a few decades of actual superheroes existing in the world and that being a socially normalized thing. And at that point, superhero comics kind of fell out of fashion in like the mm-hmm. 30s, 40s, 50s. And then Dr. Manhattan is like the blue guy. And so in this world, he becomes this extreme superheroic, like actually gets like, metaphysical superpowers. And then he becomes sort of the centerpiece of American foreign policy, because they basically this guy has the ability to like use telekinesis, fly, like, you know,
and
explode
like
a tank
reality,
with his mind.
Like
he's basically like Apocalypse in Marvel Comics. Like he has like every power and it's absurd, mm-hmm. like how powerful this once human and now superheroic man becomes. And so then he also for a brief time works with other superheroes, like masked superheroes. And there's all these politics that are introduced about that history, about like, should they have secret identities or not? Should they work with the government mm-hmm. or not? And the comic takes place in 1985. So it's like after a lot of superheroes have already like been widely decided by society to be kind of a fucked up thing that shouldn't have been mm-hmm. permitted. And also the whole world is completely different thanks to the fact that Dr. Manhattan even exists and that superheroes have been normalized for so long. So it's basically like a comic that actually supposes what would happen in real human society if superheroes were real, in such a grounded and historically layered and detailed mm-hmm. way that is astounding to me. Like as I've been rereading it, I've just been like, the level of historical context and also just the way that humans act in response to things makes this world feel real in a way
Absolutely.
That I don't think that many other attempts at doing the exact same thing have adequately done. Like
I completely agree.
It's the like the book excerpts that you were describing help lend a lot of credibility to that, but it's also just the way characters talk to each other, because a lot of it is like these older superheroes looking back on their horrific lives and the horrific violence mm-hmm. of that, and just I don't know. It's dark, but it's dark with an intention that I appreciate and that I don't feel happens in a lot of like, oh, dark superhero kind of media. God, you know what I mean? Yeah.
No, yeah. It's on a different level with that stuff. I totally agree. I think that there's a level of just human... Okay, here's an example. When Rorschach gets captured and thrown in prison,
yes.
He is interviewed by this psychologist. And there's a whole thing with the psychologist who keeps coming back to him. And Rorschach kind of gets to the guy. And you get these glimpses of his life at home and the way that he's like obsessed with work and is like not paying attention to his wife. Mm-hmm. And they have these like arguments about sex. And then they have friends over and he's like really inappropriate. And it's these really minor things. And it's all so subtle and so the art. By the way, I looked it up. The art is Dave Gibbons did the art, and John Higgins is the colorist. Which the coloring in this is really amazing. Also freaking amazing. And so you get this view of his, just a little view of his life, but it's so totally believable. And that's some of the stuff that I think that now I'm like just more able to empathize with and understand all these people. And like I had mentioned last week, like things like Rorschach, how he really has lost it. And
yes.
He says these things that seem badass, but it's almost like making fun of Batman, like Batman's thought bubbles where it's like, the city is a rat's ass or whatever. He like says these things and you know, and he's always saying this stuff, but like really he like has all these weird hang-ups and is this like kind of like misogynist, like sex obsessed, like sort of right wing weirdo who like just goes and just beats the shit out of people and kills them on the street and like has all these problems.
Informed by his own actual trauma that then you learn about where like he's abused by his mother and like abandoned by people and like clearly has all these hang-ups and you're like, okay, it makes sense. Right. But of course, people outside of Rorschach don't know that that's his deal and are just like seeing him as this symbol as opposed to like this deeply fucked up person. So it's like, you can't really have superheroes exist because they're going to be deeply fucked up people that we've like elevated and allowed to be authority figures. But it's, I mean, that in and of itself is wild as like a concept.
And like opens the door to so many cool explorations of things. I mean, it's, I feel like a lot of things have tried to do this. It's funny that show The Boys that I sort of was medium on or like just did. It felt like an imitation of Watchmen a lot of the time. It's like, oh, what if superheroes were real? And it was a much more kind of irreverent, violent, silly look at it, though at times serious. But once someone's done what Watchmen did, which is, I'm now realizing, rereading it, like, is this holy shit thing. Like, I can't even imagine when this came out. People must have just really, I mean, I get why
this was
this. I mean,
they pretty much did lose their minds. Like, it's like what every other thing has been in reaction to is this freaking comic. Like, to a fault, perhaps. I feel like in rereading it, I was like, is this just going to annoy me now? Like, am I just going to read this and be irritated by it? And then I was kind of like annoyed in a different way that it was so good, because I was just like, how does this have any right to be as clever nuanced as it is?
And,
I mean, of course,
and rich. It's so rich. Yeah. Like, it's so... The feelies, the world building stuff that's going on, the way you get a sense of all of these, you know, like brands, there's a truck driving around that has like a certain brand on it, or a blimp overhead. And they're like these little world details that are very video games. Like, I feel like video games, I learned a lot from Watchmen. And it's something that other comics have done as well, but it's so often that you'll see headlines in the background and they're all very consciously placed. You never quite feel that you're just seeing an authentic look into the world. You can tell that things have been adjusted so that they can be read by you in every frame, you know, so you can really see what's happening. But it's still really well done and like carefully put together. And I'm appreciating the art and the way that it all kind of weaves together to not over explain, but still give you a ton of information. Like, is just really impressive.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess it's maybe worth noting that I feel like the series' core flaw is that its female characters are like the least well written in the book, but I'm far from the first person to point that out. I feel like
you're talking about Watchmen itself.
She acts,
I thought you were talking about the TV show.
No, I'll talk about that in a second. Lori is like supposedly 35, but like acts like a 16-year-old, I would say, for like the entirety of the book. Like, she just has this weird young girl like naivete, which I guess you could argue because she's a superhero, like she's kind of grown up in this weird box and like doesn't really know how to be a person.
They were going for that, but I agree that it's sort of, she just feels like a thin character compared to especially the other characters that get so
she's
much
a
more,
super thin character. I feel like there's an Alan Moore quote that I'm gonna botch, but he said something about how he had like come up with a great backstory for every single character and then was like, wait, the team needs a woman on it. Every superhero team always has that one woman, right? Which is like, it's hilarious that that's true, and that he was kind of lampooning that by like creating Laurie's mother and then having Laurie be like the second iteration of like the one female character on a team, because that is a trope that's like also being lampooned within right. the context of Watchmen, but like, so even the fact that these are thinly written characters, you could argue, is like sort of a commentary on that, but it doesn't really work.
But like, right, but the real subversion of the trope would have been to make her an amazingly written character.
I know, but
like
I don't know if Alan Moore could do that or not, but right. There's also, it's a super violent comic. Like, people have written a lot about the way that Alan Moore like approaches sexual assault and just like assault in his books. I feel like Watchmen is one of the examples of a time where I feel like it actually works, because in part because of the art. Like, it's not so, like, Laurie's mom is Silk Spectre, and her backstory is that she gets raped. This is very early on. She gets raped by another superhero, and it's not really a spoiler. It's like a pretty core part of the opening of the book. So like that whole rape as backstory thing, it's obviously just a common thing that happens for a lot of female characters in comics and many other things. But in this book, it's not presented as like lurid. It's drawn in just this horrible way, in this way that a lot of the violence in the book is drawn, where as opposed to other superhero comics where violence is kind of fetishized and glorified and sometimes sexualized in or presented as like pornographic in like a sexy way. In this book, the violence is just always presented as disgusting and alienating. And I would include the rape scene in that as well. And I just think that's effective. Like, I find it effective, but that's just my opinion of it. I don't love the killing joke. Like, I'm not going to stan every Alan Moore thing, but I do feel like Watchmen actually does some interesting stuff with portraying superhero heroic violence as horrible and alienating in ways that I think make the book work really well.
And are like true to the nature of violence. I agree. I remembered that scene happens, that the comedian tries to rape or like assaults the Silk Spectre. And I was curious how the scene would go, especially because it was written quite a while ago, and you never know like how it's going to work. And I totally agree about the art. It's horrifying looking. There's a scene where what's his name, Hooded Justice, comes in
and like barges in on them, and
he
saves
kind of interrupts
her.
Them, and he like stops it from happening.
Yeah,
and she's on the ground, and she has like blood coming down from her face, and it's like this, and her eyes. It's just the way that she's drawn, the way the whole scene. It's like really a terrifying.
Yeah, like it's not sexy at all. Yeah. It's like disgusting, like, and horrible.
It's very much just like this horrible thing is happening, and that. And I agree that it's not like presented in a way that bothered me. I mean, the scene obviously bothered me, but not in that way.
But it bothered you in the way it's supposed to bother you.
In the way it was meant to, right. And a lot of the violence is that way. I was thinking, and this actually, to compare it to the movie really quick, since the movie, you know, it's got problems. So the violence, that's the easiest thing to point to about the movie not getting it, like why the movie is kind of doesn't work, is there's the scene where Night Owl and the new Silk Spectre, I forget their first names, are both, they're kind of like reconnecting throughout the first part of the book, and they go out and they kind of get dinner, and they're walking and they go down an alley to like take a shortcut, and they get jumped by some thugs. And this whole thing is like intercut, I think, with the Dr. Manhattan scene.
Yeah.
Like I was saying last week, I'm also like really struck by how this almost in the entire book, every single story is being told in parallel with another story. There's almost never a time where for more than a page, you're just with one person. It's always like interlaced, which is so like ambitious and cool. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so it's all intercut, but you're getting these scenes of them basically getting mugged by the stupidest muggers ever who don't realize that they're mugging these two, you know,
why
powerful
would they
vigilantes.
Realize? Yeah.
Right. And it's never fully clear in the book whether they like are just really in shape and good at fighting. That's kind of basically what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of just people, but they're really good at fighting, and they kick the shit out of these guys. And it's like the scenes are not cool. It's like two people really violently just in a street fight. Like they're just breaking arms and like punching people in the blood. Like I said, the blood in this comic always looks really kind of dark and
like,
horrifying.
Yeah.
That's one of the colorist things that John Higgins does that I think is really cool. And then at the end of the fight, they're both like up against the wall, and they're like totally out of breath because they're both kind of out of shape, and they're looking at each other, and they have these really kind of ugly, you know, the faces that you make when you're really out of breath and just like, and they're like gasping. And it's not cool. It's not like empowering. It's just like wild and kind of fucked up and really like, so that fight scene is amazing because you read it in a comic and you're like, whoa, like this is so far from Biff Pow, you know, people flying around in your average comic book. And then in the movie, I remember that scene. I tried to rewatch the movie and I got to that scene, and finally I was like, I can't fucking watch this. And I hadn't even reread the book. But that scene is, it's, you know, what's his name? Zack Snyder is the director. Mm-hmm. And he like did it in the Zack Snyder 300 fashion. And there's all these sweet ass slow-mo shots and like dudes flying through the air and like wire stuff where it just seems like they're doing physically impossible things. It's heightened to where they seem super powerful, like superhuman. Mm-hmm. And it's just, even though it's the same scene and it kind of has the same, they're trying to have the same point, the way that it's created just can't help but make something awesome looking.
Yeah.
And it's just such a fatal flaw. Like it totally misses, like you were saying, the whole point of the way that the comic depicts the violence. And it's very clear to me now rereading it. I'm like, oh, they were absolutely doing this on purpose. This is not supposed to look cool. Like none of it is.
Yeah. I actually watched the movie before reading the book, which I don't recommend doing, but it's my own thing that I did. And when I saw the movie, I was like, the tone of this movie is wrong. I can't tell why, and I don't understand what I'm looking at. And like, luckily I had a friend who was wildly into the Watchmen comic, and she was like, okay, like, here's the things the movie was doing wrong. And she like delivered several lectures to me about how great Watchmen was. And I was like, fine. I'm just going to read it. I'm just going to read the book. And then I read the book and I was like, oh, okay, I get it. It's a totally different thing.
Right.
But I do feel like the thing that worked in the movie was some of the like awkwardness. So like there's this sex scene between Night Owl and Laurie, and like it's so freaking awkward in the movie. I haven't watched it in a while, but I remember being in the theater and being like, is this supposed to be so awkward and weird and bad?
It's that they play the original Leonard Cohen version of Hallelujah, which is the version where he's kind of like hollering it out, and it's very, you're used to the beautiful Jeff Buckley version. So there's this weird singer and it's like, whoa. Yes. And I remember the theater laughing when I saw
it. And I think you're supposed to, because in the comic their hookup is like also very weird, and then later they do it again in costume and it's like still weird but in a different way. I don't remember if the movie does that juxtaposition or not, but there's like the hint of that uncomfortableness in the movie. It's just that it couldn't, I feel like Zack Snyder and like any director would fall into this trap of being like, well, they have to look cool. And so I watched the Watchmen pilot, and I guess I can transition neatly into that. I'm not going to spoil it for you because it's such a wild ride that I feel like it's worth experiencing without having too many plot details. But I feel like, well, I really want to watch more episodes because I hear it's going to be good. I don't know. Like there's reporters who've gotten to see the first six episodes out there, and they seem more amped about it. But there's some cool, there's some issues with the idea of the superheroes seeming too cool. But I also feel like that is undercut at the same time by other aspects of the plot, which is part of what intrigues me about it. So in this version of the show, it's not a one-to-one adaptation of the book. It takes place in the same universe as the book, but it's kind of like a sequel, which seems impossible in and of itself.
Because it's kind of present day, right?
Right. So it takes place in 2019, but it takes place in the version of 2019 that happens after the 1985 in Watchmen. Okay,
that would have been my assumption, and that's cool. That's what I was hoping.
It's cool, but it's also like, what? Like, how could you even...
I mean, like what if a giant blue guy had won the Vietnam War for us? What would we be doing right now?
Right. Well, you'll find out about that in the pilot.
Oh, nice. That's exciting.
So... in this version of the world, cops are superheroes, superheroes are cops, and all cops have to wear masks and be vigilantes. And so the main character, she is both a superhero and also a cop. And also, if you're a cop, you can't tell anyone you're a cop because you are a superhero. So like, that's the crazy premise
we're
starting with. But it also means... so like Geeta Jackson did the VG chat with Mike Fahey and Joshua Rivera. And one of the points that she was making in the VG chat was, what did normal people do in this world? Like, are cops just showing up to normal crimes, like with masks and being like, well, I'm here to respond to a noise complaint. And like, I feel like one of the flaws with the show is that it's just 45 minutes. And like, they introduce all this absurd high stakes stuff that I think is great and like is working really well for the Watchmen energy. And I'm excited about that part of it. But I don't have the part of the book that I'm really enjoying, which we've been talking about, which is the real world aspect of it. Like, I don't have the newspaper seller on the street or like the kid that's reading the pirate comic. Like that stuff isn't quite in the show yet because it's not quite as grounded in the historical reality of its world yet. But I'm hoping that it can be, because I think that's what makes Watchmen really powerful and eerie, is just like, oh, like this feels like our world. This feels like the real world. And I don't really feel like the pilot is quite there. It doesn't, it feels like a very strange version of the world. I think in part because Watchmen, like, okay, like they got to address the squid thing. Like they got to include some like weird stuff that's in the comic that is kind of metaphysical, but it, I don't know. I'll be really curious to hear what you think about it after you've seen the pilot and presumably the second episode.
I'm looking forward to it, especially knowing, it's funny, the collection that I have on the back, there's a bunch of quotes from like the Village Voice and Publishers Weekly, and they're all like, the, you know, the greatest, whatever, graphic novel, a titanic accomplishment. And the last thing is a quote, and I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's basically like one of the greatest pieces of pop culture ever, or pop entertainment ever created. And the quote is attributed to Damian Lindelof, co-creator of Lost, who would go on to be the showrunner, and before that, make The Leftovers, which I'm very interested in him specifically running the show, because the thing that made The Leftovers cool was partly that it was just focus on the lives of like ordinary people in, you know, in this world where this extraordinary thing had happened, but also that they themselves, you know, you didn't always get this look at the outside world as very concerned with their stories, but it did do a good job of filling that, and it was very imaginative about it, even while leaving you with questions like, okay, but what about this, what about this, what about that, you know, the minute you hear the premise for The Leftovers, what 2% of the world just vanishes, you come up with all these questions like, okay, but what about this, and then you get these hints and answers, but the whole show didn't give them to you. So as someone like, he might be uniquely suited to this. So I'm hearing that the show is cool is good. And I'm definitely looking forward to watching it. So I will probably talk about it next week. Hopefully people like listening to us talk about Watchmen, but I think they probably do.
I think they probably do. I don't know. There's a lot of Watchmen fans out there. I mean, it's a very famous book. I guess I can say I do recommend reading the book. It's also marked down significantly on like Amazon or whatever, if you're willing to use Amazon because of the show. So like that's a big perk.
Yeah, it's, I would make the same recommendation.
Yeah.
Both because I know it's important for the show, and because it's like we're saying, it's super good. It's a great
read. It's still a really, really
good book.
Great comic. And it's influenced so many other things that I feel like it's just worth recommending just as a piece of canon. Anyway, that's enough talking about Watchmen, I think.
Yeah, for now.
I think we did it, and we'll be back next week with more Watchmen, but Kirk has a music pick that he's going to tell us about.
So I do. I went on this podcast recently where I recorded it. It's called This Is Modern Rock. It's a cool guy named Will in Portland who records it, and he picks music that's like, there was a number one hit on the rock charts in a certain year, and does seasons according to that. So we recorded, the episode actually won't be out forever because he's making the whole season first, which is an interesting way to make a podcast. Very different, but seems probably kind of cool in some ways. And we talked about 1991. And so one of the tunes that we talked about is my music pick for this week. And it is American Music by the Violent Femmes, which is a song that I knew because I know the Violent Femmes. I like know this one and Blister in the Sun, but I hadn't listened to it in a long time. And they're so freaking cool. They're such a cool band. And I really like this tune, so I just wanted to make this the music pick. So here's a clip of American Music by the Violent Femmes from Why Do Birds Sing, an album they put out in 1991.
Cool.
Yeah, I like their energy. They're like, they just, it's just people in a room kind of making noise. They have that kind of busking energy. I think they were buskers. They started out like on the street, just sort of doing the acoustic thing, and they never really lost that. There's definitely a lot of cool stuff in this. So it was fun to like go and like really listen to this tune. It just kind of repeats that, I like American music, like over and over, but gets weirder and weirder as it goes, and you're like, oh, this is a really cool song. So, yeah, great band. Man.
Neat. Very 90s app. Watchmen,
yes,
DDR.
90s. It's true. It's true. The 90s are hot right now. I feel
they're
like
so
a lot of stuff
right
is
now.
It's very 90s.
All right. And with that, we conclude our ep.
We'll be back in a week.
Yeah, we will.
I will see you in a week, Maddie.
Yes, you will.
Bye.
Bye. Kotaku Split Screen is the official podcast of Kotaku.com. It's produced by Kirk Hamilton, Jason Schreier, and me, Maddie Myers. Kirk edits and mixes the podcast and also wrote and performed our theme song and other music. You can find us on most popular podcast services, and we hope you'll leave us a review if you like what you hear. Find old episodes at kotaku.com/splitscreen. Email us at splitscreen@kotaku.com.